I sat up half of last night reading Jane Eyre. Are you old enough, Daddy, to remember 60 years ago? And, if so, did people talk that way? The haughty Lady Blanche says to the footman, "Stop your chattering, knave, and do my bidding." Mr. Rochester talks about the metal welkin when he means the sky, and as for the madwoman who laughs like a hyena, and sets fire to bed curtains and tears up wedding veils and bites, it's melodrama of the purest, but just the same, you read and read and read. I can't see how any girl could have written such a book, especially any girl who was brought up in a churchyard. There's something about those Brontes that fascinates me. Their books, their lives, their spirit. Where did they get it? When I was reading about little Jane's troubles in the charity school, I got so angry that I had to go out and take a walk. I understood exactly how she felt. Having known Mrs. Libbett, I could see Mr. Brocklehurst. Don't be outraged, Daddy. I am not intimating that the John Grier home was like the Lowood Institute. We had plenty to eat, and plenty to wear, sufficient water to wash in, and a furnace in the cellar. But there was one deadly likeness. Our lives were absolutely monotonous and uneventful. Nothing nice ever happened, except ice cream on Sundays, and even that was regular. In all the 18 years I was there, I only had one adventure, when the woodshed burned. We had to get up in the night and dress, so as to be ready in case the house should catch. But it didn't catch and we went back to bed. Everybody likes a few surprises, it's a perfectly natural human craving. But I never had one, until Mrs. Lippett called me to the office to tell me that Mr. John Smith was going to send me to college. And then she broke the news so gradually, that it just barely shocked me. You know, Daddy, I think that the most necessary quality for any person to have, is imagination. It makes people able to put themselves in other people's places. It makes them kind and sympathetic, and understanding. It ought to be cultivated in children. But the John Grier home instantly stamped out the slightest flicker that appeared. Duty was the one quality that was encouraged. I don't think children ought to know the meaning of the word, it's odious, detestable. They ought to do everything from love. Wait until you see the orphan asylum that I'm going to be the head of. It's my favorite play at night before I go to sleep. I plan it out to the littlest detail, the meals and clothes and study and amusements and punishments, for even my superior orphans are sometimes bad. But anyway, they are going to be happy. I think that everyone, no matter how many troubles he may have, when he grows up, ought to have a happy childhood to look back upon. And if I ever have any children of my own, no matter how unhappy I may be, I am not going to let them have any cares until they grow up. There goes the chapel bell. I'll finish this letter sometime. Thursday. When I came in from laboratory this afternoon, I found a squirrel sitting on the tea table, helping himself to almonds. These are the kind of callers we entertain now that warm weather has come and the windows stay open. Saturday morning. Perhaps you think, last night being Friday, with no classes today, that I passed a nice quiet, readable evening with the set of Stevenson that I bought with my prize money, but if so, you've never attended a girls' college, Daddy dear. Six friends dropped in to make fudge, and one of them dropped the fudge, while it was still liquid, right in the middle of our best rug. We shall never be able to clean up the mess. I haven't mentioned any lessons of late, but we are still having them every day. It's sort of a relief though, to get away from them, and discuss life in the large, rather one-sided discussions that you and I hold, but that's your own fault. You are welcome to answer back any time you choose. I've been writing this letter off and on for 3 days, and I fear by now vous êtes bien bored. Goodbye, nice Mr. Man. Judy. Mr. Daddy Longlegs Smith. Sir, having completed the study of argumentation, and the science of dividing a thesis into heads, I have decided to adopt the following form for letter writing. It contains all necessary facts, but no unnecessary verbiage. 1. We had written examinations this week in A. Chemistry. B. History. 2. A new dormitory is being built. A. Its material is A. Red brick. B. Gray stone. B. Its capacity will be A. 1 dean, 5 instructors. B. 200 girls. C. 1 housekeeper, 3 cooks, 20 waitresses, 20 chambermaids. 3. We had junket for dessert tonight. 4. I am writing a special topic upon the sources of Shakespeare's plays. 5. Lou McMahon slipped and fell this afternoon at basketball, and she A. dislocated her shoulder. B. bruised her knee. 6. I have a new hat trimmed with A. blue velvet ribbon. B. 2 blue quills. C. 3 red pom-poms. 7. It is 9:30. 8. Good night. Judy. 2nd June. Dear Daddy Long Legs, you will never guess the nice thing that has happened. The McBrides have asked me to spend the summer at their camp in the Adirondacks. They belong to a sort of club, on a lovely little lake in the middle of the woods. The different members have houses, made of logs dotted about among the trees, and they go canoeing on the lake, and take long walks through trails to other camps, and have dances once a week in the clubhouse. Jimmy McBride is going to have a college friend, visiting him part of the summer, so you see we shall have plenty of men to dance with. Wasn't it sweet of Mrs. McBride to ask me? It appears that she liked me when I was there for Christmas. Please excuse this being short. It isn't a real letter, it's just to let you know that I'm disposed of for the summer. Yours. In a very contented frame of mind. Judy. 5th June. Dear Daddy Long Legs. Your secretary man has just written to me saying that Mr. Smith prefers that I should not accept Mrs. McBride's invitation, but should return to Lock Willow the same as last summer. Why, Daddy? You don't understand about it. Mrs. McBride does want me, really and truly. I'm not the least bit of trouble in the house. I'm a help. They don't take up many servants, and Sally and I can do lots of useful things. It's a fine chance for me to learn housekeeping. Every woman ought to understand it, and I only know asylum keeping. There aren't any girls our age at the camp, and Mrs. McBride wants me for a companion for Sally. We are planning to do a lot of reading together. We are going to read all of the books, for next year's English and Sociology. The professor said it would be a great help, if we would get our reading finished in the summer, and it's so much easier to remember it if we read together and talk it over. Just to live in the same house with Sally's mother, is an education. She's the most interesting, entertaining, companionable, charming woman in the world, she knows everything. Think how many summers I've spent with Mrs. Lippitt, and how I'll appreciate the contrast. You needn't be afraid that I'll be crowding them, for their house is made of rubber. When they have a lot of company, they just sprinkle tents about in the woods, and turn the boys outside. It's going to be such a nice, healthy summer exercising out of doors every minute. Jimmy McBride is going to teach me how to ride horseback and paddle a canoe, and how to shoot and, oh, lots of things I ought to know. It's the kind of nice, jolly, carefree time that I've never had, and I think every girl deserves it once in her life. Of course I'll do exactly as you say, but please, please let me go, Daddy. I've never wanted anything so much. This isn't Jerusha Abbott, the future great author, writing to you. It's just Judy, a girl. 9th June. Mr. John Smith. Sir, yours of the 7th inst. At hand. In compliance with the instructions received through your secretary, I leave on Friday next to spend the summer at Lock Willow Farm. I hope always to remain. Miss Jerusha Abbott. Lock Willow Farm. 3rd August. Dear Daddy Long Legs. It has been nearly 2 months since I wrote, which wasn't nice of me, I know, but I haven't loved you much this summer, you see I'm being frank. You can't imagine how disappointed I was at having to give up the McBride's camp. Of course I know that you're my guardian, and that I have to regard your wishes in all matters, but I couldn't see any reason. It was so distinctly the best thing that could have happened to me. If I had been Daddy, and you had been Judy, I should have said, bless you my child, run along and have a good time, see lots of new people and learn lots of new things, live out of doors, and get strong and well, and rested for a year of hard work. But not at all. Just a curt line from your secretary, ordering me to Lock Willow. It's the impersonality of your commands that hurts my feelings. It seems as though, If you felt the tiniest little bit for me the way I feel for you, you'd sometimes send me a message that you'd written with your own hand, instead of those beastly typewritten secretary's notes. If there were the slightest hint that you cared, I'd do anything on earth to please you. I know that I was to write nice, long, detailed letters without ever expecting any answer. You're living up to your side of the bargain, I'm being educated, and I suppose you're thinking I'm not living up to mine. But, Daddy, it is a hard bargain. It is, really. I'm so awfully lonely. You are the only person I have to care for, and you are so shadowy. You're just an imaginary man that I've made up, and probably the real you isn't a bit like my imaginary you. But you did once, when I was ill in the infirmary, send me a message, and now, when I am feeling awfully forgotten, I get out your card and read it over. I don't think I am telling you at all what I started to say, which was this. Although my feelings are still hurt, for it is very humiliating to be picked up and moved about by an arbitrary, peremptory, unreasonable, omnipotent, invisible providence, still, when a man has been as kind and generous and thoughtful as you have heretofore been towards me, I suppose he has the right to be an arbitrary, peremptory, unreasonable, invisible providence if he chooses, and so, I'll forgive you and be cheerful again. But I still don't enjoy getting Sally's letters about the good times they are having in camp. However, we will draw a veil over that and begin again. I've been writing and writing this summer, 4 short stories finished and sent to 4 different magazines. So you see I'm trying to be an author. I have a workroom fixed in a corner of the attic where Master Jervy used to have his rainy day playroom. It's in a cool, breezy corner with 2 dormer windows, and shaded by a maple tree with a family of red squirrels living in a hole. I'll write a nicer letter in a few days and tell you all the farm news. We need rain. Yours as ever. Judy. 10th August. Mr. Daddy Long Legs. Sir, I address you from the second crotch in the willow tree by the pool in the pasture. There's a frog croaking underneath, a locust singing overhead and 2 little devil down heads starting up and down the trunk. I've been here for an hour, it's a very comfortable crotch, especially after being upholstered with 2 sofa cushions. I came up with a pen and tablet hoping to write an immortal short story, but I've been having a dreadful time with my heroine. I can't make her behave as I want her to behave, so I've abandoned her for the moment, and I'm writing to you. Not much relief though, for I can't make you behave as I want you to, either. If you are in that dreadful New York, I wish I could send you some of this lovely, breezy, sunshiny outlook. The country is heaven after a week of rain. Speaking of heaven, do you remember Mr. Kellogg that I told you about last summer? The minister of the little white church at the corners. Well, the poor old soul is dead, last winter of pneumonia. I went half a dozen times to hear him preach and got very well acquainted with his theology. He believed to the end exactly the same things he started with. It seems to me that a man who can think straight along for 47 years without changing a single idea ought to be kept in a cabinet as a curiosity. I hope he is enjoying his harp and golden crown, he was so perfectly sure of finding them. There's a new young man, very consequential, in his place. The congregation is pretty dubious, especially the faction led by Deacon Cummings. It looks as though there was going to be an awful split in the church. We don't care for innovations in religion in this neighborhood. During our week of rain I sat up in the attic and had an orgy of reading, Stevenson, mostly. He himself is more entertaining than any of the characters in his books, I dare say he made himself into the kind of hero that would look well in print. Don't you think it was perfect of him to spend all the $10,000 his father left, for a yacht, and go sailing off to the South Seas? He lived up to his adventurous creed. If my father had left me $10,000, I'd do it, too. The thought of Lima makes me wild. I want to see the tropics. I want to see the whole world. I am going to be a great author, or artist, or actress, or playwright, or whatever sort of a great person I turn out to be. I have a terrible wander thirst. The very sight of a map makes me want to put on my hat and take an umbrella and start. I shall see before I die the palms and temples of the South. Thursday. Evening at twilight, sitting on the doorstep. Very hard to get any news into this letter. Judy is becoming so philosophical of late, that she wishes to discourse largely of the world in general, instead of descending to the trivial details of daily life. But if you must have news, here it is. Our 9 young pigs waded across the brook and ran away last Tuesday, and only 8 came back. We don't want to accuse anyone unjustly, but we suspect that Widow Dowd has won more than she ought to have. Mr. Weaver has painted his barn and his 2 silos a bright pumpkin yellow, a very ugly color, but he says it will wear. The Brewers have company this week, Mrs. Brewer's sister and 2 nieces from Ohio. One of our Rhode Island Reds only brought off 3 chicks out of 15 eggs. We can't imagine what was the trouble. Rhode Island Reds, in my opinion, are a very inferior breed. I prefer Buff Orpingtons. The new clerk in the post office at Bonnerick Four Corners drank every drop of Jamaica ginger they had in stock, $7 worth, before he was discovered. Old Ira Hatch has rheumatism and can't work anymore. He never saved his money when he was earning good wages, so now he has to live on the town. There's to be an ice cream social at the schoolhouse next Saturday evening. Come and bring your families. I have a new hat that I bought for 25 cents at the post office. This is my latest portrait, on my way to rake the hay. It's getting too dark to see, anyway, the noose is all used up. Good night. Judy.